From Los Angeles, California, here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, and other organizations for the purpose of improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. This seminar is entitled Guidelines in Dealing with People. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about the movement.
You know, this process of discipline regarding rules and regulations really gets extremely hard for people to follow, because innately we all feel, I should be free. I shouldn't have to do that. And sure, I feel the same way too. Why not? I think that goes with being human and having the human form. But I also found out years ago when I came to California, the speed limit was not set. It was like per existing conditions. And so you really never knew how fast you could go or when you would get a ticket. And it was always like, well, how will I know if the existing conditions is the same way that policeman that's going to give me the ticket thinks is the existing condition? How am I going to know? What are the rules? How is he going to evaluate my driving performance? And it got difficult, to say the least. And so I said, why don't they just have a speed limit so that you'll know what that is, and when you know what it is, you'll be free. Because you know he can't do something, policeman, can't do something unjustifiable to you because he doesn't like the car you drive or your hair or something else. So it's interesting that the rules are made as an independent reference point for us. And if we can accept those as guidelines and not as ball and chain and prison walls, we start getting free. But the big key in all this, the magic word for the golden age, is going to be attitude. You've heard me come back to this over and over again. When we are having a rough time, our perception of it, our attitude towards it, is going to influence our whole beingness towards that. And if we can have a positive mental attitude, not necessarily being Pollyannish about it. If there's something wrong and you have a negative mental attitude, use that to correct the situation to get it right. It isn't looking at it and say, oh, they're bleeding to death, but I have a positive mental attitude, they won't bleed to death. No, you say, golly, they're bleeding to death, let's get busy and help them and move on it and then change the attitude. So it isn't just sitting with a good attitude and not being involved in life. It is being involved. But it's being involved in a detached way. And that detachment is something we'll be working on until the day we leave the planet. And who knows, for some, maybe even longer. The whole process of being disciplined early in life is very important. But I think far, far too many of us we're disciplined in terms of negativity. And so we thought we're really being punished. You know, and that lower part of us recorded that and made all sorts of guilt associations and other problems, and we start carrying them on through our life, and then we turn around and start doing it to our children. And at some point, we have to break that process of passing off negative attitudes to our children. And even that little baby that's brand new, don't think for one minute that it doesn't understand in its way what you're saying. And when you are training it, yes, training it, much like you train a dog to sit and to stand up and to heel, yes, much like that, over and over and over, and very loving. But you explain to that form we call the child the love that you have for it and why you're doing it. And don't worry about baby talking to it or anything like this. But present it to them. As you do present it in love, your attitude towards it will also come loving. Your touch will come loving. Your energy to that child will come loving, and that baby will play it back. Then's when you think, I'd lay down my life for my child. And then when it gets old and you say, do that, and they say, I don't want it. Now you have rebellion, you know, anarchy. What do? Hit them, knock them down? Well, it's really important to explain to them, look, I have a headache, I don't feel well, and you can't have the television loud, I don't care what you think about it. They might as well understand that you are the authority, but don't beat them up and turn the television off. Explain to them, I have a headache, it's bothering me. I'm working on it to get rid of it. Part of my working on it is for you to turn that down. Part of working on it is for you to come back and rub the back of my neck. Part of it is for you to clean up your room. Let them understand that you also are having these situations. Or when they grow up, see, they think, well, when I get to be older, I won't have this problem. That isn't true. We still have the problems of procrastination as an adult we did as a child, unless someone cares enough to discipline. Years ago, when people were being drafted into the military, it was, in some of the families, that was just a catastrophe. In some families, it was a disguised blessing for that young man to be taken to the military, and they'd make him stand up and stand up straight for long hours, long periods of time, and build strength inside of him. And they would, it was called discipline. And then when that moment came for survival, he had the ability to survive because he had the discipline, and that's called freedom. When we have to get our accounting done, when we have to get our bookkeeping done, when we have to get the car washed, when we have to do these things, let's just move right into them and do them. That's the discipline. People tell me, oh, I'm having trouble. I got to write. How am I going to write? I say, sit down. Get a pencil and paper. Well, I usually tell them, the seat of the pants on the seat of the chair. That's the first process. Put something in the typewriter. Hit a key. Start a physical action moving. Then that part of you that is the repository of information and knowledge will start opening. And sometimes it'll just flood through. And then they say, well, it came through too fast. I couldn't type that fast. And I say, look, dummy, get a tape recorder. Talking to a tape recorder. They say, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I say, what kind of book are you writing? You know, it might not be too intelligent if you're not using your intelligence to help you do that. I've seen a lot of people that have written these beautiful books, and you go to visit them and you think, how on earth could they write that book? I mean, this is remarkable. Well, I tell you, writing is a technique. You sit down long enough and you work with it long enough, you can get it down. Nobody says these things are easy. No one. But they're hard to do if you don't do them. And they're easier to do if you put yourself to it. Some people just use the mind. They do it in their mind, thinking there it's done. And on that level, it is. And if they're paying you for that level, good luck. I'd like a job like that, too. Because how are they going to know what you have or haven't done? But on this level, the physical, when we enter into it, do not be afraid of entering into life. Life is awareness. Awareness is to be lived, to enter into it, to gain the experience. Now comes the cautions, right? Take care of yourself so you can take care of others, and don't hurt yourself and don't hurt others. Very simple. And people say, oh, John Roger, there's so many people say this is wrong and that's wrong and this is wrong and that's wrong. How am I going to know? How do I know? What are the sins? I say, don't look at me. But there are some guidelines, and I use a very simple one, a very simple, simple one. in dealing with people. And it is, if we do this, will this distract them from God? Very simple. Is this going to throw them from their own awareness of the loving heart? And if it's going to, as far as I'm concerned, friends, you've got a sin going. And some things aren't necessarily in that level. Because of the work I do, it's often there. I mean, it involves that level. But many of you don't work in that level. And so yours really boils down to a few things also. Will it hurt them? Am I destroying them? How do I feel about this? Then you can run it through your mind with a creative imagination, put it out there, and see what it's going to look like as far as you can see it. And if you start to feel funny inside about it, don't do it. If in doubt, don't do it. Talk it out. You start talking to them, look, I don't know how to handle this situation. In my mind, I thought of doing this, 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 and this, but I got a funny feeling with it. They may say, yeah, sure, because that part there would really hurt me. So you've still told them. That's the verbal level. And they still are put on notice of the progression they can do. And they can handle it all by themselves. And you don't have to take that responsibility. See, the thing is, last night we were talking about the greed and lust and avarice and why we keep hanging on to individuals when it's long past that we should not hang on to them, not necessarily cut them off, but we should not be letting them disrupt our emotional body. And usually, hey, almost 100% of the time, we're there because we want something in return. So set a deadline for your return. And if it doesn't come through the door at that time, say, they've got me going. I thought I was going to use them. They're using me. Okay, we're all here to be used. Abused? No. Misused? No. Used? Yes. That's our process. In fact, if people don't use us, we sometimes feel they don't love us. It's like, you didn't use me the way I wanted to be used. What do we usually say? You don't love me the way I want to be loved. If you love me, why didn't you use me this way? This is what it is. If we ignore them, it's like, that's abuse. And so we come up to that old enemy called rejection. See, immediately up it comes. Well, I won't enter into it because they'll reject me. Well, what are you entering into? Are you entering into lust, greed, avarice, control? Are you after their pocketbook, their money? What are you after with them? If you say, well, I'm just after their freedom, don't be afraid of rejection. They've already got it. And the way they maintain their freedom is for you to have them free inside of you. If you come okay, if you go okay, if you stay, it doesn't matter. You're free. And when they come and go, you love them. What is that? That's one of the first processes of unconditional loving. Let them be free inside of you. And if you think of somebody and they're not free inside of you, you start getting uptight, and you start looking at the negative, and you start grinding your teeth, then you better start checking what do you want from them. It's rarely a need. That need's supplied, primarily straight through God. What? Air, water, food, clothing, shelter, protection, love. Yes, God will love you if you give him a chance. All the other things are wants and desires. And so we must be very careful, because when we have a want, it also brings us child. It's called despair. And when we have desire, it brings us child. It's called sorrow and heartache. And I just capsule that all under the term rejection. It's a very hard one to work with, because we'll set up patterns for people to follow in relating to ourselves. You must sit this way. You must do this way. You can't do this. You can't do that. And they're no longer free inside of us. No longer free. We're going to control them, manipulate them. And see, the hardest one not to do is to manipulate your father or your child. Those are two of the most difficult, because the parent, through experience, can see down the road of experience. And they attempt, even vicariously, to give their child the benefit of their years. But that parent should also be one of the high priests of God. They should carry the light of God in them and give to the light of God by explaining to the youngster in detail. Hey, and so maybe the child doesn't have all the brains you thought he should have. You can't fool genetics. So take time. They had to repeat to you, repeat to your child. What is wisdom? Practice, 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 practice. Over and over and over. We keep at it. Why? You don't win until you get to the end, and you don't get to the end until you endure all things. And when you've endured all things, you've gained the strength and the conviction of your ability. Then you don't have to worry or be concerned with negativity. When you're disciplining a child, when you're disciplining anyone, first use love. First use love. Hey, if they don't understand, say, look, I love you. I want to explain something to you. Then use wisdom. The wisdom will be your experiences in life. And tell to them, look, I have gone through things similar like this. This has been my experience. And explain it to them. Don't be ashamed that your child thinks, oh, my parent never did anything wrong. Then they grow up thinking they can't do anything wrong. They can't enter into life. And they have tremendous problems because they're trying to be so perfect and have the perfect companion. And that's hard to come by. Really hard. You've been divorced, you know what I'm talking about. And you that are thinking about it, and you that are going into it, poor fools. Unless the perfection is the loving, and you allow them room to be, instead of trying to mold them into your form that you think they should be, it's difficult. Because each one of us comes into this world with certain divine elements inside of us, a certain packaging, a certain computer key punch card. And we're going to run that key punch through, come hell or high water. We're going to run it through. And really what we want is for mom and dad to stand by as guidelines that if we get in trouble, oh my God, don't forsake me. Don't forsake me. They're called compulsions. They're called obsessions. They're called deviations. I like to call them all variations. Because if you're experiencing a deviation and somebody calls you deviant, you're locked in. If they say, well, that's a variation on the theme, but let's get back to the main chords, then it's easier for you. You can start tuning yourself in more and more. So when you're disciplining a child, love them. Present the wisdom, and power automatically appears. You don't have to say, shut up, because the love is gone, the wisdom's gone, and you're asserting power, and that's negative, and you're going to lose. And you're going to lose. Some of these old homilies, you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar, something like that. There's nothing phony about that. That's really quite true. We can catch more of everything with the sweetness of our beingness than with the negative of our beingness. If we attempt to force somebody or assert ourselves on them, if they're worth their salt, and believe me, if it's your kid, they are, they're going to stand up to you. Then you're going to have to physically abuse them. And then the law of the land comes in, and you get to pay the piper. Then when it all happens, you say, I don't know why I did that. It's like you lost your own discipline. You stepped beyond your own boundary lines of life. You weren't disciplined. Back to the old drafting board. Back into it. But here's the rub. People mistake kindness for weakness. And those who mistake it, and usually they're youngsters, must also feel your physical presence. So when they're yelling and screaming or doing something wrong, or they go to run out in the street in front of a car and you grab them, Don't try to grab them lightly. Grab them hard enough that they can't get away for a lot of reasons. And if you bruise their arm, God bless them. It's a blessing rather than have to take the body to the morgue. You understand what I'm saying? There is these times, but these are the wisdoms. And you may say, well, John Roger, this situation was happening. I didn't know how to handle it. And I didn't know what to do, and this happened. It's all over. What? I say, that was karma. The inability to do anything with it was the karma. Should I tell you the most severe karma I can think of? It's the karma where you work hard all your life, long hours, to get ahead, and you never get ahead. Your karma is not to get ahead. It's just to work long hours. And somebody else is always getting the results of your work, right? Makes sense. But if that's our karma, hey, and believe me, for some of us it is, then why not discipline ourselves to it? Correct our attitude and say, at least I know what it is. I don't have to worry about being president. Or anything else. I just got to worry about going to work and doing it, and they yell at me, but they won't fire me, because who else could they get such a good worker at such low pay? And I have no ambition to get ahead, to take anybody else's job. Everybody should love me and feel secure around me. But that's not true. They'll think, what are they up to? I don't know how you're going to handle that one, folks. Some things are left to guessing, and that's a guess one. I don't know. Of course, I would probably handle it by saying, you don't know, do you, what I'm up to? And smile and walk away. I'll keep them busy for a week. And they'll be watching me, everything I do, and I don't have to worry about making a mistake, because they'll call me real fast. Aha, mistake. Fine, correct it. Where's the mistake now? See, a lot of people don't want their mistakes pointed out. They don't want their shortcomings revealed. How are you going to know what it is? You'll never reveal it to yourself by the mirror. Never. Who is going to reveal it to you? The one you let into your heart. That one who you say to love, honor, cherish, as long as you both shall something or other. It should be as long as you both shall love. Because after that, you still may be married. But there's no love. It's not going to work. It's going. Then you put up with them. It's called contempt. It's like, well, that's the best I can do. I guess I have to put up with it. And I could go into a whole series of jokes at this point, and a song and a dance, and you'd probably all throw coins. Because you would recognize very readily what this is I'm talking about. The first discipline is to self. First discipline. If someone is doing something that bugs the heaven out of you, and you want them to stop that, they are pointing out to you your next level of work on yourself, not on them. Not on them. On yourself. That way, no matter what environment we find ourselves in, if this is a disaster or a catastrophe appears, we say, okay, fine. Why? That's the attitude of it. You're starving to death, I'm on a 40-day fast. Okay, that's laughing, all right. But we should be prepared to handle our physical level responsibilities, not out of fear, because then the thing we fear will come upon us. It will come upon us. But out of faith of preservation, by entering into the disciplines of our own beingness, getting ourselves flexible enough so that if we have to run 100 yards fast to get out of the way of something, we can do that. You know, like 50 yards will be short. You got to do the whole 100. It may be a mile. In other words, we must condition the physical body to be responsible to physical demands. And there are many ways of doing this. There are yoga classes, there are spas and saunas and And we could go on and start naming all of them. It's the beautification trip, if you will. Sure, what's wrong with that? Create a good image in the physical body. Have no concern about that that is the soul image, because it is what it is. And if it's been made after God's image, you don't have a thing to be concerned about. And to find that out, you're going to have to do those things that will scientifically take you to that as part of the evolution of your beingness. It can be done, yes. All of the Bibles, I don't just mean the Christian Bible, you know, as we start from Genesis and end up with Revelation, all of the books, the sacred scriptures from every religion, every country, all of them, have pointed to the kingdom being within. But it would be foolish to think that heaven's inside this physical form. But that we go into the gates of our beingness and contact that consciousness that is the divine and lift to the kingdom of heaven by increasing the vibratory frequency. We get to make those choices. We get the result of those choices. We end up saying, let's all get through, mature emotionally through puberty. Let's grow up emotionally. Let's stop haranguing each other as little kids. And let's accept the responsibility of maturing adults and move into the spiritual flow of our life. Then while we live here, we can enjoy as much as it's possible to enjoy. That again comes to each person. Whatever you decide to do, place it in God's will, in God's hands. Ask God. And then do it as though God has said, it's yours, it's blessed. Do it so willingly and lovingly and so completely that anyone coming behind you will say, wow, yours was perfect. Berush Beishan.
John Rogers' closing words were Berush Beishan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.